The Fan on Demand. Got Game on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet590.ca.
This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Coming up this week, the Stanley Cup playoffs are underway and EA has predicted a winner. The next generation of gaming will include a new Call of Duty, and our reviews include the crazy over-the-top world of Far Cry 3, Blood Dragon, and Poker Night 2.
Have you got game?
This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Omen Qureshi. I'm joined by Christine Chubb and Brian Calhoun as we hear a loud bang coming from the studio next to us. And we're all like, what was that? But there are some production studios next door, so they're producing some crazy awesomeness.
Probably you hear some weird noises around here. A little inside baseball. Like, sometimes they're working on the stairwell. They're rebuilding the inside stairwell by the elevators.
Yep.
So if you're in the washroom, it is the strangest sound.
What did I eat for lunch? My God.
Or what monsters attacking this building?
Well, particularly in our studio, because we're right next to two production studios, so we always hear crazy like sound effects and music coming out of there. What you're listening to, it's hard to tell for the first couple of minutes there, but it is a show about video games. We're on each and every week. You can follow us on Twitter at GotGame590. Check out our blog at Sportsnet590.ca. Download our show on iTunes or listen live on Sunday mornings. The Stanley Cup playoffs are underway. Our beloved Toronto Maple Leafs are in it for the first time in 9 years. And as they do every year, EA put out a simulation. And they found out, according to them, through their playdowns, that the New York Rangers will take on the Chicago Blackhawks in the Stanley Cup Finals. And the champions will be the New York Rangers.
Do you think anywhere in the simulation there was a 4-1 blowout for Boston in the first game of the series?
Possibly. You know, I'm going to look through. I actually didn't check. Let's see where they had the Leafs going out. They had the Leafs
right in the first round.
First round of Boston. Now, to their credit, they have them going down swinging with Boston winning 4 games and Leafs taking 3.
Yeah, so it goes to 7.
Yeah.
Hey, I think fans in this city, while they wouldn't be happy with losing in the first round, I think they, after what happened in the first game, they'd be quite happy with going to game 7. We should mention we are taping this the night after, or the day after game 1, so we don't know what happens after that. Yeah. I'm going to assume the Leafs won the next 4 and they win it all in 5 games.
How could they not?
Of course.
That's the Got Game simulation.
The Got Game simulation has the Leafs winning the first round 4-1.
Very scientific. We wrote Leafs win every game on a piece of paper. And
we all just nodded. We're like, yes.
Yeah. We're like, yeah, that's happening. Yeah.
We took
like
a Democratic vote. All three of us were as unanimous. We said, yes, the Leafs will win. We also want to mention the NHL cover vote carries on. And both Joffrey Lupul and James Van Riemsdyk are through the next round. So keep voting if you want your Leafs to be on the cover.
One of the things I think that's interesting about the EA Sports Rangers winning is that, according to the Vegas Insider, the actual odds in Vegas of the Rangers winning the Cup are 16-1. So they are not the favorites in Vegas.
No, definitely not. And if you're going to look at it realistically, I think it's fairly unlikely that the Rangers will win the Cup this year. Because who are they playing in round one? I don't even know. They're in tough, though. They are playing Washington. And Washington's coming in really hot. So I don't know. But they got Henrik Lundqvist. It could happen. So there you go. If you're going to put down any money and you want to go by the EA simulation, they have the Rangers beating the Blackhawks, even though the Blackhawks probably came into the playoffs the co-favorites with the Penguins. So
yeah, they are, according to the website as well, 7-2 odds. So they're
the Blackhawks.
Yeah, so they're right up there.
I don't understand the two. How do they come up with that? How is it 7-2 instead of 7-1?
It's math. They're second. Let's just say that they are right behind
Penguins?
The Penguins, who are 3-1.
Not 3-2.
Three to two sevenths.
3-4 odds. So that's
Man,
the story.
After you guys are like done fleecing me at poker, I'm taking you guys to bet on horses.
I just go with the one that has the fun name.
Do you understand horse racing?
Oh yeah, my family was big in horse racing for years.
Really? The horses run around the track. What is there to know?
No, but I mean the whole exactors and
my grandfather owned horses.
Did he?
Really?
That raced at Woodbine.
I've known you for 6 years. I did not know that. It's very interesting. One day we should do Got Game live from Woodbine Racetrack one day.
Nice.
And then Calhoun will just teach us about horse racing.
That would be fun.
It's a different kind of game. It's gaming, still. Not video gaming, but whatever. The other, I guess, big news that came out this week is that if you are a fan of Call of Duty, shocking, there's going to be another one.
Actually, it is kind of shocking. They're banning Soap and what's the name of all the characters that were in the last Call of Duty games? Because this is called Call of Duty Ghost. It's coming from Infinity Ward, who really shot off with the original Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare. Mm-hmm. And you would think that they're going to make another Modern Warfare game.
Of course.
But this one's going to be a whole new roster of characters, a whole new plot. They're calling this a brand new sub-brand. So the next couple of Call of Duty games coming out of Infinity Ward will be Ghost something or other, Ghost 2, Ghost 3, whatever.
Ghost Recon has been taken.
And also, apparently they're going to be building this all on a brand new engine. So I have to assume, even though it hasn't been mentioned,
it'll
be on the next Xbox console.
Yeah, it says right here, it says, to see exclusive first look of Call of Duty, Ghost, tune into the Xbox The Next Generation, revealed on May 21st at 1 p.m. Eastern time. It's 10 a.m. Pacific.
I didn't even need to read the press release that much to figure that one out.
Yeah, so I mean,
with
there
the deal
go,
they've had for years.
As the hipster kids would say, Avi, that it's going to be on the next console.
Never do that again.
No.
Brian, you're a big, I don't know if you're a big Call of Duty fan, but you played many of them, if not all of them.
I think I've played the majority of them.
Yeah, you even played the Vita version. So how do you feel about them going away from Black Ops and Modern Warfare for this?
I'm fine with that. It's been getting a little stale. In fact, the question I was going to put forth to you guys is, like, what could there possibly be in order to get you really interested, to get you psyched? Not just to go, oh, okay, when it comes out, I will probably play if they send us a review copy, but to actually get you interested in paying to do this. And I'm having a hard time. I think they kind of have to literally go to the moon in order to get me interested.
Yeah, that's true. And the Ghost title makes me excited because maybe they're going to do a lot more about stealthiness, I would assume. That's
or
what Ghost means.
They'll just bring back that character from, was it the second Modern Warfare game that was actually called Ghost, and just do a whole series based on him?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty big universe they've created, so they can do a lot of plots and subplots and side stories and stuff like that. I don't know. I mean, these games really are driven by multiplayer, so I think they have to find new stuff to do with that too.
Yeah.
And we still don't know what the new Xbox can do, so I think that'll dictate a lot of what they do with this game. I mean, Call of Duties have sold gangbusters over the past 4 or 5 years. They're among, if not they are, the top-selling games of all time, so...
One of the things I think will be cool, though, is that, especially from the last E3 press conference, when they talked a lot about smart glass integration, which I assume is obviously going to be a big part, to be able to see, you know, maps on your tablets and really be able to get a better grip. Because every time I play those Call of Duty games, one of my big problems is that I always forget where I am. So.
What happens if the controller is a tablet again?
Oh,
yeah,
you can't
exactly.
See it, but I have a terrible look on my face.
I have that exact same.
I wish people could have seen the scowl and look that Christine just gave. It was priceless.
And I didn't emote that, but I had the exact same reaction.
Yeah.
Wow. I really hope it isn't.
I don't think it will be.
Well, they are trying to get their smart glass thing. Like, they really want it to be a second screen sort of deal. Mm-hmm. So the next obvious jump would be to do that. Because let's face it, Nintendo has it built in. Sony has it with their Vita.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it, that's not like a handheld like tablet for the console, but at the same time, it's a handheld tablet for their console. So that only leaves Microsoft, which really has been pushing their smart glass harder than like Nintendo's been pushing the Wii U, to be honest. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, the announcement of the new Xbox is this month. Now we are in May, so
it's
just
it's
a few
exciting.
Weeks away.
May 21st.
Yeah, and then that's just about 2 weeks to E3. So big things are happening. Now, you are listening to Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Moman, Brian, Christine with me. As par usual, you can follow us on Twitter at GotGame590. This next story makes me laugh because I've never heard of a company being sued.
Sony, last week we talked about that.
Yeah, well, I've heard of a company being sued many times. But being sued for putting out a game that wasn't the game that they were going to put out, basically, is what it is. And we're talking about Gearbox and Sega are being sued for allegedly not releasing the game that they had advertised. And what it comes down to is they're being sued because the game Aliens Colonial Marines, somebody's alleging that, hey, remember all those trailers and stuff that you showed at different events?
E3 demos, PAX demos, stuff like that.
Yeah, and all the playable videos and stuff that you showed. That's not the game that came out that people played, and we're not happy about that. So they're having this big lawsuit launched against them, which I don't know, Brian, you actually played that game.
Yeah, and I didn't actually watch any of the coverage leading up into... Because I'll be honest, I mean, I reviewed that game because we are Got Game. What we do is we review the video games and sort of give our advice on whether or not we think you should play or not.
Plus, Aliens, the series, is awesome.
Yeah, well, I've watched all the movies, and I think the movie franchise is great. I really wasn't expecting all that much from the video game franchise, and I guess my complete lack of interest was rewarded with a game that was just kind of there. It was a little middling, it was kind of forgettable. It was a decent shooter that was in that Aliens universe, but other than the fact that you shoot a gun and it's in the Aliens universe, there really wasn't that much to the game.
Yeah. The second part of this story, so this is what the law firm says. By setting the embargo for the morning of the game, people who pre-ordered this Aliens-themed first-person shooter were not given enough time to research reviews of critics before picking up their copy of the game.
Okay, that's on you.
Okay.
Because you can just wait till the next day.
Yeah, like, exactly.
The pre-order does not have to be picked up that day. You have, like, what?
Not only that.
2 weeks?
If you're concerned about not having time to research reviews, don't pre-order it.
Yeah.
Just walk into the store and buy it once you've done your research.
I agree.
There's no... And it's Aliens Colonial Marines. For the love of... you know what I mean? Like, it's not like there wasn't going to be copies available.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't Call of Duty. This isn't, you know, a Bioshock or
well, there might not have been copies available if EB Games said that we're not going to be able to sell this. So we'll buy like two copies and those two Maybe. Copies may sell.
Maybe. Yeah. That's true. But that part of the lawsuit to me is bunk because... You are completely within capability of waiting to read reviews and then buy it. You don't have to pre-order it. And even if you do pre-order it, you can always cancel your pre-order anyway.
But the concept of false advertising is always a pain. And it bugs me in movies, when movies do this all the time, when all the trailers leading up to the movie say that it's a comedy, and then you go to it, and it's this horribly dramatic movie with, like, one or two scenes of funny.
Are you speaking of... 50-50?
What movie are you talking
there
about?
There is, yeah, 50-50. There's a few others, though, where it's just like, oh... You know, the worst one was the movie Stepmothers with Julia Roberts and Susan Sarandon.
Yeah.
They said, oh, it's the funniest movie ever. It's a terrible movie.
Well, what's funnier than a mother dying of cancer and having to leave her children?
Nothing's funnier than having to trying to teach your husband's new wife how to be the mom to your children because you're dying. But yeah, that's hilariously knee slapping.
It's terrible. Yeah, there's a few funny people was like that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, an inappropriately named movie.
Well, anyhow, to get back to video games.
Oh, yes.
But this is Got Games, not Got Movies.
Yeah. Got Movies, Christine.
Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
I'm not entirely sure this lawsuit has any legs. It just seems like the people who are behind it don't really know how the industry works. And perhaps it's just the industry is so broken and we're so used to being it that we don't realize it's broken. Yeah. But there's a reason why we don't write reviews at E3. Yeah. I mean, what you see at E3 and, say, conventions like PAX and everything else, like Fan Expo, before the game is released, is never the final code.
Yeah.
In fact, they make a code for E3 so they can show it off to the world, and then they ship that out to PAX and Fan Expo and all these other conventions, and they give people a taste of it.
Yep.
But, I mean, that is just going to be thrown away. That piece of code is garbage once they are done showing up. It's not... any part of the game. It's just a little snippet. It's made specifically for that. It's not the final representation of the game.
Yeah, when I first read this, my absolute first thought was the journey that Fable the Journey had. When I first saw the game, and then even the next year when I saw the game at E3, and then even a few weeks before the game came out and we saw the demo of it, they were all... very different experiences
Absolutely.
To what the actual gameplay was. And sometimes you just have to take these with a grain of salt. You have to say, this is what you've advertised, and sometimes it's not going to be, because you have to think they're advertising it this way for a reason. They're presenting it this way for a reason.
We say it on this show all the time. All the time on this show we say, oh, it's an early look. We'll see how it turns out. Mm-hmm. This is just an early thing. We quantify things all the time.
Well, despite that, I'm still going to go out and pre-order the Bureau XCOM Declassified. Now, that was the first-person shooter I've been seeing it since, like, 2010 at E3, and they just announced that it's now a third-person shooter that's coming out this August 20th, and that game's looked different every time I've seen it. I need to know what that game is.
Yeah. We should also mention Watch Dogs has a release date, November the 19th.
Speaking of games to pre-order.
Yeah. No kidding. We have a lot more to come on this edition of Got Game, including two reviews. So stick around. This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We've got game. Do you in the game?
This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I am Momin Qureshi, Brian Calhoun, and Christine Chubb joining me as always. We talk about video games every week. You can follow us on Twitter at GotGame590. Look up our blog at sportsnet590.ca. We've gotten to the review portion of our show, doing a couple of games this week. We'll talk about Poker Night 2 from Telltale a little later on. But first, Far Cry 3, Blood Dragon. Now, on this show...
Lasers, eyes, eye lasers.
From dragons.
From dragons.
Which is awesome. And it fits into the theme of our show because we like to talk about local stuff and local studios. And this game has a very direct Toronto affiliation.
It really does.
This one comes from Ubisoft Montreal.
Yep.
But do we want to spoil the very beginning of this entire game?
I mean, you learn it in the first, like,
Let's say this. There are some Montreal Canadian fans on that development team.
Yeah.
Or my name is not Brian Calhoun.
Yeah. So, anyway. But I don't even know where to start with this game. I mean, it's...
You want to say that it's like a reskinned version of Far Cry 3.
Yes.
And that's both... accurate, but not
inaccurate as
but,
well.
Yeah. But not an accurate description at the same time.
Yeah. Because I feel like the appropriate word to or phrasing for this game is tongue in cheek. A lot of the stuff that's done is very, very tongue in cheek, and I loved it. I thought it was like everything is a little over the top, and I don't know
a little over the top.
Okay, everything in this game is completely over the top to be more accurate, I guess. And I don't know about you, Brian or Christine, but I definitely got a very Duke Nukem feel from this game. Like I felt like the lead character was not like a ripoff, but he had very Duke Nukem-esque kind of traits and tactics and stuff like that, and I think that's a good thing, like the old school kind. They made it kind of like an old 80s kind of cop cartoon, but
I would have said an action film.
Renegade Cowboy is all I kept thinking. I was like, this guy's nuts.
A little bit of Rambo mixed in with a little bit of Duke Nukem is kind of what you should expect.
Actually, yeah, and it reminds me a lot. Remember that? I don't know if you guys remember that Sylvester Stallone movie Cobra. Where he's
that, yes, I do.
He reminds me a lot of that character.
Fair enough.
Definitely, this game is not meant for younger players.
No.
There is plenty of coarse language in this game right from the very beginning. But I mean, I don't know, Brian. Maybe walk us through a bit of the storyline.
I'm not totally sure exactly how much of the story we want to give away.
Yeah.
But so you play as Rex. You're this future cyber commando,
part cyborg, mostly human, I guess.
Yeah, something like that. You're basically like the RoboCop.
I was going to say, I think RoboCop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
something like RoboCop. And you're sent to this island to investigate why this... Imagine if, like, that cartoon G.I. Joe, if their bad guy Cobra sort of took over this island and started playing around with, like, missiles that could launch, like, harmful chemicals across the world.
That's an incredibly accurate description, I would say.
Yeah. Basically, you are G.I. Joe. Cobra has taken over an island, and you gotta go in and stop them from launching the missiles. And because it's a game based on Far Cry 3, what they did was they took the Far Cry 3 island, and they chopped it basically in, like, a third or something like that.
A quarter,
a quarter or a third or something like that. They took that area and they said, here, this is your game space, and you can run around doing all sorts of side missions if you want, where you can, like, rescue hostages or hunt animals or take over bases. And by the way, the bases, taking them over this time, I found to be far more interesting than Far Cry 3.
Yeah.
Far Cry 3, I didn't really, like, take over that many bases because I just did not really find it all that interesting. You know, it really did not appeal to me. But this time, all the bases have multiple layers, and there's, you know, great vantage points to take everyone out from, and you can sneak around, or you can just go full Rambo, or you can turn off the power shield. The game is kind of science fiction-y because, let's face it, cyber commandos, you know, lots of 80s references. There is sort of a science fiction element, although it does have that sort of Rambo movie feel. But
especially with the weapons, too. A lot of the weapons are very science fiction.
A lot of them are like laser guns.
Yeah.
I don't think you actually get to shoot a laser gun. I don't remember seeing that, but...
Well, there's one that's kind of like it with the red scope. I don't remember what it was called.
Yeah, there's a couple of them. There's a couple of them that kind of fire like photons, if we can use a Star Trek reference.
All I know is that there's this one gun that basically... I keep bringing up Rambo because that's kind of the experience I had. You get one gun that's kind of like Rambo's machine gun.
Yeah.
And then you just start... I just started going wild with that thing. Yeah. And the greatest part is that when you're using that, he lets out a scream like Rambo's in the jungle, just going, ah! And it's the greatest thing ever. And that's why this game is great. It's those little touches.
Oh, yeah.
It's like every time when you hit the melee button, you're not near anybody. Well, in most games, the knife just goes past the screen. In this one, you flip somebody off. That's the button to flip. So this game has a flipping somebody off button.
You know what part I actually enjoyed a lot? And it's one of the annoying parts of almost every game is the tutorial. When you go through the tutorial, like, oh, I got to do the tutorial. And the best part is Rex says all that stuff for you. He's like, oh, come on. I know how to do this. Are you kidding me? Oh, come on. And he just complains his way through the entire tutorial. And you're like, yes, this is exactly how I feel. So it was very well done, that part.
And for the entire game, the game games making sort of reference to all these sort of things in video games.
Yeah.
That I think the guys at Montreal, or Ubisoft Montreal, feel that could probably be done better. That's at least my guess. I didn't get a chance to talk to him and ask him that question, but that's at least the feeling I got from playing their game. And I have to admit, it's kind of funny. It's like, well, there's a button that's like, press something to jump, and then the next one's like, aren't tutorials annoying?
Yeah,
aren't tutorials? Like, press if you can understand English, stuff like that. But the problem I found with this game is that I think they're a little bit too in love with their own writing.
Yeah.
And the majority of the jokes, while funny, went on way too long. That tutorial, while funny, it could have been shorter.
I agree with that. Yeah, it could have been shorter.
It really was just drawn out just so you could get a few more jokes in there.
I like it when the joke goes on a little too long, though. That's my weird kind of sense of humor, where it's like, it's funny, and then it's not. But then it gets funny again. Like, that's the kind of humor I like.
So
fair enough.
Yeah.
So nobody had anything to say to that.
No. Christine likes funny jokes is what we learned now.
Yeah, I wasn't saying about it because you and I share the same sense of humor, so.
That's fine.
I didn't find, though, that it was a perfect game.
No.
There were some glitches in this game.
There was, I don't know if you had this problem, but I had this problem when I first tried to play it. It crashed a couple times, and then it, took forever to load. Like, it would load like really slowly and then pause and then load a bit and then pause. And so I actually had to put it down. I was like, I don't have the patience for this right now. And then I came back the next day and it worked just fine. So I don't know. Huh. I saw a few people tweeting about some issues, but I will say in the past few days that I've played, there have been no glitches or issues. So perhaps they fixed them already.
Yeah, I had an experience where I the first time I picked up the game, I played it for about 3 hours. And then I was like, all right, I'm going to play it tomorrow. And when I picked it up the next day, my entire save game wasn't there. I had to start right from the beginning, which drove me absolutely crazy because I was like, oh, God, I have to go through this all over again.
Yeah.
And the one thing that, I mean, it's pretty well known on the show that I'm not the biggest fan of shooters. And I thought it was a little too excessively shootery. I mean, it was lovely, but I was just like, oh, God. I was just so bad at it. Like, I was just absolutely terrible at it.
Well, most games, you're terrible. I don't think we can really hold that against the game.
Wah, wah.
And I had a weird issue as well. I don't know about you guys and how often you use sort of the blood dragons to do your dirty work, but one mechanics in the game is that you can pick up these hearts from these cobra stand-ins, if you will, and sort of throw them around and lure these blood dragons around to do your bidding. They really wouldn't pay attention to me.
Really?
Yeah. I'd like put them in the perfect position. Here, go attack these guys. That's what you're supposed to do. If you get near them and you move around a bit, they will sense you and they will attack you. So you always have to be careful and like slow down and crouch around a bit when they get close. And that's kind of boring. But you figure when they're sort of in the proximity of the bad guys, the same thing would happen. Didn't happen with me. I just, like, they would just stand there and everybody would be walking around like they're all best buddies. So I found it to be kind of annoying. However, to get back to good stuff, oh, wow, the soundtrack is great.
Yeah,
yeah, it is.
I don't know about you guys, but it just has that perfect mix of, like, action movie combined with 80s video game.
Mm-hmm.
And the best part is, like, it always comes up, and I don't know, like, who's in charge of the music in that game, but they did this in Far Cry 3. It's like they pick the perfect music for, like, a perfect sequence. And the one I can think of is at the very beginning, you're just blowing stuff up to pretty much the intro music of the entire game.
Right.
And it's awesome. And then it switched to some song that was from the Vietnam War.
Right.
Oh, it wasn't Fortunate Son, but something along those lines.
Yeah, I forget what it was too. But.
But soundtrack all across the board is great. And like Far Cry 3, one of the best parts of this game is that it allows you to sort of approach the game the way you want to.
Mm-hmm. It gives you lots of options. There's tons of options in this game.
Yeah, exactly. It's a big sandbox. I didn't find it was as sandboxy as Far Cry 3 was, because in that game, all sorts of strange stuff just happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you were just dropped in the middle of this island, and it's like, okay, go. And then, like, bears were attacking base camps for you and clearing them out for you. And it's like all of a sudden you're just standing there watching and the game goes, oh, you cleared out this camp. Like, just random stuff like that would happen. It doesn't happen as much in this game, but you still have that option to go in guns blazing or sneak around or whatever you want to do.
I think that's the thing about it being DLC versus an actual full game is that they really did streamline anything that was kind of a little excessive. But what I did like about this game as well is that even if you didn't play Far Cry 3, you would be perfectly at home with this game. Like, I talked to a few people on Twitter, or I saw a few people tweeting that they didn't really have any interest in Far Cry 3, but this really piqued their interest. And I think that they would really like this. Like, you really don't have to know anything about Far Cry
3.
No, not at all. It's the connection is the island. It was fun. It was tons of fun.
And to make that connection easier, you don't actually have to own Far Cry 3.
No.
This is a separate by itself download. You don't even put in a disc from Far Cry 3 to get going. You just buy it, download it, and away it goes.
I was going to say, you didn't even mention the best part, which is to me that it's a downloadable game, and this is not a regular $60 game. This is much, much cheaper, and therefore that, to me, amps up the value of it.
Well, that's because with like the original Far Cry 3, I feel that everyone's favorite part will be different depending on your personality and how you approach this game. Like, for me, I just sat there for the first probably 15 minutes that I was in the game space burning grass and stuff like that. Because let's face it, some people just want to watch the world burn.
Very nice.
You knew if I was going to bring up burning stuff down, I'd have to bring up that quote. But yeah, the game's ability just to sort of put you in this space and like just make it feel so real has been brought over from Far Cry 3 and put in this game. And you really can burn all the grass and like get rid of, you know, aggressors by just sort of burning stuff around you, mm-hmm. like you could in Far Cry 3, which just adds to just how great the world is. You know, it doesn't really matter about the missions itself, even though those are okay. I found them to be a little repetitive, too many escort missions for my taste, but whatever. The world itself is, I think, why you would play a Far Cry 3 game, and they kept that for this.
Yeah. So what would you give the game then?
I would give it an 8 out of 10.
Yeah.
Especially considering how great it is for 10... No, 15
bucks? 15 bucks.
15 bucks. And depending on how you play it, you can get through it in like 5 hours if you mainline everything, or you can take 10 hours if you do all the sorts of side quests, which in and of themselves, I don't normally do side quests, but this game, I was just like, okay, first thing I did, take over every base on the map, because I found it to be more exciting than I did in actual Far Cry 3.
Nice.
So Brian gives Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon an 8 out of 10. It is a super fun game. Still to come on Got Game, we're going to review Poker Night 2 and have some other good stuff on Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. We've got game. Do you? Gameplay.
This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Omen Qureshi, Brian Calhoun, Christine Chubb with me. This week we had a couple reviews, so we spaced them out over two segments. Last segment we did Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon. If you missed it, you can find our show on iTunes or check the Got Game blog at sportsnet590.ca or follow us on Twitter at GotGame590. The other game we're reviewing, Brian, is Telltale's Poker Night 2.
Not really a game, and I don't mean to be rude. I mean, that's not an insult towards what's happening here with Poker Night 2. But after playing it for so long, it's hard to really call it a game. There is a game in there, but that's not really why you play Poker Night 2. I mean, the entire setup is that you as the player, and that's what you call it in the game. You call it the player, like it's Saints Row. Mm-hmm. He's like, come on, player, let's just do this, which I always love. I always thought that the best way to introduce every character that you take a role as that doesn't have a name or a face or whatever, it's just call him player.
Yeah.
But that's just...
Or you could call him playa if you're hip enough.
No.
No.
You are not.
Not at all.
You're not hip enough.
I never said I was. I just said if you are, you can call them playa.
Anyhow, to get away from the Brian Calhoun School of Game Design, you, Brock Sampson from Venture, that show about Venture Brothers.
Yeah, Venture Brothers? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So
that's a great show.
Ash Williams from Army of Darkness, Claptrap from Borderlands and Borderlands 2, Sam from Sam & Max, and also GLaDOS from Portal and Portal 2. So it's basically you and those people.
No Strongbad? I thought Strongbad was in this too.
No, he was in the previous game. He was in the original Poker Night.
Less interested. Go on.
But those guys are basically sitting around a poker table of you having conversations. And what really makes the game great is that it kind of feels like this could really happen. Like the way they write the characters, the way the voice acting happens, the way the exchanges happen between the characters, it really does feel like they could be here in this room with us and we're all playing poker and they're talking, you know, the guy from the cartoon is talking to the guy, say, from the movie, and they're having a conversation about what's it like to fight all those evil guys in the movie.
It's just really
awesome how they have these interactions and this how real that can feel.
But did Claptrap drive you crazy?
Yes.
That is what Claptrap does.
That's where basically my biggest problem with the game is, and everyone's going to have a different experience with this, but my experience was that the very first five or so games, and this happened afterwards as well, but it got really bad in the very first five games. Everyone's just a little bit too eager to go all in.
Oh. Mm.
And seeing that Claptrap had the best cards every time.
Oh, so, really?
Well, not every time, but at least those first five times. It's not like the game's rigged.
No.
It's just that there was a streak at the very beginning when I was getting introduced to the game where Claptrap had the best hand, every hand. So I'm stuck there listening to Claptrap for, I don't know, about 20 minutes. It takes about 20 minutes to finish a game.
Oh, my.
Which is not why I bought the game.
Yeah.
You know, I'm more of a fan of, say, Sam and Max or Ash or Brock or GLaDOS than I would be.
Basically anybody else but him.
So their sort of need to go all in so early knocks so many people off the table so often that mm-hmm. kind of destroyed a bit of the gameplay as I was getting into it. You know, later on, I did get, you know, the chance to experience pretty much all the interactions, but at the very beginning, that was annoying.
Mm-hmm. Was the poker play realistic? I mean, did that ruin the, if you're like an actual poker player or you like to play poker with some sort of seriousness, did that affect the gameplay or?
I can't answer that question because I don't play poker. I don't know how to play poker. I've learned a little bit now. I'm still not totally sure exactly what they mean by the blinds being 400 and 800, but I'm starting to figure it out.
I'll explain it to you when we're off the air.
It's just, I've never been, when I go to casino, I'm more about the slot machines. That's kind of what I enjoy doing more.
Right.
By the way, video game slot machines are happening. I was in Windsor this past weekend.
I saw your tweet.
Tweeting out images of an actual video game, one of the Big Buck Hunter games, and you actually had to take the gun, and like it was like Duck Hunt for a second there. And I really wasn't all that good at the slot part, but once I got to the actual like Duck Hunt part of the game, man, I was racking up like $10 bills every time. If I could sit there and just do that, I could probably have taken the entire casino. Give enough time.
Brian bankrolls a casino with Duck Hunt. That's amazing.
I think what Brian's trying to tell us, Christine, is the next time we go out, dinner's on him.
That's
basically what it comes down to. I wanted to ask you, did the conversations ever get repetitive? Did you ever hear the same? Okay.
That's the thing. I mean, one of the reasons why I did not like the fact that everybody was going all in was that I heard most of Claptrap's jokes in the first, you know, five or so rounds. And I really did not hear anything from Sam until, say, 2 days later, when there were some games where he would stay in more. He would seem to get knocked out the most out of everybody. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but that character's AI was going all in almost all the time. So he was getting knocked out really quickly over and over and over again. So it is repetitive. But if you can put the time into it, you can get a lot of laughs out of this game. And if you sort of unlock more parts of the game, because you can unlock different chip sets, card sets, and tables. Mm-hmm. And if you get sort of a set based on the theme of the Venture Brothers or Portal, whatever, the entire area gets redecorated and you unlock more conversations.
Oh, that'd be good.
Yeah, the conversation sort of focuses on that character and you learn a little bit more about that character. Or maybe not learn, but they have more conversations that you hadn't heard before. Mm-hmm. About that character, and some of them are really cool.
I think that's, I don't know, like, even if it does get repetitive, I still think it would be fun to sit down and play poker that way, as opposed to just going to one of those other sites where you're just playing with nobody that you know.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think the majority of people who are going to play this game will play it like I will. You'll be in there for a very short time. It'll be a great time, but it won't be a very long time.
Yeah.
So if you're going to get this game because Brock Sampson, Ash Williams, Sam from Sam and Max, Claptrap, and GLaDOS are in the game and they're going to talk to each other, not because of poker. Because there's Texas Hold'em and there's Omaha Hold'em. Mm-hmm. And it's a game, but the game mechanics aren't that deep.
I have no idea what in the world Omaha Hold'em is.
Yeah, I don't know what Omaha Hold'em is either. I'm going to have to Google that.
You hold five cards, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other two are probably put on the table, something like that.
So it's the reverse.
Not great at poker, though, let me tell you. Luckily,
Christine, so that means that the three of us need to play poker so we can fleece Brian for all the money he won at the casino.
Yeah.
That's the plan.
No, that's not going to happen.
Right.
You want a bad plan to announce it on the air while I'm listening?
Well, I'm hoping I'll get some listener support, but I guess not. So overall, what would you give this game? Are you going to rate it?
I would give it a 7 out of 10. I feel that I played enough to really experience the game. But the problem is that it doesn't take very long to experience enough to understand what the game is and experience everything. I will say that one of the things I did not like about this game is that, as I said before, you can unlock different conversations by unlocking these different collectibles. It takes a while to unlock some of the ones towards the end of the list.
Yeah.
So you had to sit through a lot of claptrap jokes being repeated over and over and over again to get the newer conversations, and that's not great. But overall, 7 out of 10.
Next, we're going to move on to an interview that we did about a fairly interesting topic, at least we think so. We interviewed Galen Clavio. He's an assistant professor at Indiana University School of Public Health in Bloomington. And it was about the ongoing fight between the NCAA's current and former athletes and Electronic Arts and the whole issue of EA using the likenesses of players but not paying them for it because they don't use their actual names. And so players are upset. Among the upset ones is Ed O'Bannon, who you may remember from the NBA, and he played at UCLA, won a title there. So he's launched a class action lawsuit. And the reason we're bringing Galen Clavio on is because he did a study to find out what people actually thought about the issue. And so we opened our conversation with him saying, tell us about your study.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I've been a longtime player of EA Sports games. I mean, and other college video games. I mean, I played the football game, I played the basketball games, kind of grew up doing that. And so back in 2008, 2009, I would see these articles come out where the NCAA would claim that, well, there's no likenesses in the game. EA would say the same thing. And I knew that wasn't the case because I used to sit there and be able to input the rosters almost name for name, you know, just sitting there myself with a sheet that had the roster on it into the game itself. So, you know, knowing the way that these things generally work in court, what we decided to do was show the in-game images of the players to a group of college students, which is kind of your primary demographic when you're talking about video game players, and see if just using the base rosters, the ones that came with the game, if they could identify players that were ranked very highly in the game on a national level, and also players from their own individual schools. So we picked the top 8 players in the game on the national level, and then we picked like the top 5 players from each of these 4 schools that we did the survey at, and then we picked some random ones as well. We took pictures of the images within the game of those players, and we put them in a PowerPoint, and we showed them to people, and we asked them to write down the name and position of the players that were being shown. And what we found was, particularly people that understood college football or played the games regularly, they were very easily able to identify the national players and even to a certain extent the players on their individual teams as well.
That's really interesting. And I mean, that's the thing, right, is that as much as EA says that's not the case, it really is. I mean, I'm curious as to what drove you to do this research and figure out what the case was.
Well, you know, for me, I'm a fan of college sports. You know, I really enjoy watching them on a regular basis, but I get really tired of some of the arguments that we hear about, you know, college athletes not deserving compensation, and oh, you know, we have these video games, but people are just buying them because we have the Florida Gators or we have the Tennessee Volunteers logos in there. They're not buying them because of individual players. And I know from talking with other gamers and from my own experiences playing the game that that's not the case. That if you had a game, a basketball game or a football game that had nobody on the roster that resembled the actual players, no one would buy it. We had those in the late 90s and no one really liked those games. So, you know, so I look at it and I say, look, whatever they want to try to claim, the fact is they are using the likenesses of these players. They're using their heights and weights and positions and their general skill sets on the field. And that's really what's driving sales of the game. And, and the amount of money that gets made off of these games, I think it's, you know, it's in the tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars over the life of the contract. The idea that, you know, all of that needs to be going directly back to the athletic departments as opposed to at least some of it going back to the players who are really the driving force behind people wanting to buy the games in the first place. That was the sort of thing that got me interested in researching this in the first place.
Okay, Galen, so you have all this data that you've collected from surveying all these students. What's your next step?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, right now, I think you're starting to see a critical mass of information put together in this O'Bannon lawsuit. I'm kind of taking a wait-and-see approach because the what the NCAA and EA Sports and the Collegiate Licensing Company decide to do will kind of dictate whatever my next step is. Like, I'm not out to act as a, you know, somebody who's on the front lines of reform per se. My job was more, you know, to look at a statement that was being made by EA and by the NCAA and say, you know, that statement wasn't really true, and we can demonstrate scientifically that people could actually identify players within the game. So for me, I'm more interested now in seeing, you know, if there's data from this study that ends up being used in the lawsuit, or if there's data from other studies, because I know there are other studies coming out that study similar things with this. I'm curious to see how that affects the ruling in the court and how the whole process goes. Now, I really think what's going to be interesting is, you know, and I don't want to see this because I enjoy playing college video games, but we could see the end of the college video game system as we know it simply because they can't come up with a good way to compensate athletes for appearing in the games. That's something I think that'll be interesting to see.
We're talking to Galen Clavio, the assistant professor at Indiana University Public Health. Galen, just one last question for you. Has EA seen your study? Have they commented on it? Do they know what's going on?
They're aware of it, and in fact, and I'm not sure how much I can say because I know there's some kind of legal process going on where they're in discovery on it. But I mean, they've got access to the materials, so they're aware that it exists. And they're going to argue from a legal perspective that they're not using likenesses, and ultimately that's for the courts to decide. But yes, to answer your question, they are aware that it's out there.
All right, it's all really interesting, and we appreciate the research you did and taking some time to tell us about it. Galen, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
That does it for this week's show. For Brian Calhoun and Christine Chubb, I'm Omen Qureshi. This has been Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.